Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Four bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country 2 minutes at a time for the biggest stories of the day where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
All right, second half of the program begins right now around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people where the stories are happening. And as we opened the show today, by the way, the 2 minute drill brought to you by our friends at Hen House. And we were talking about crackers. I didn't get to go pretzels when we played the feud, but the Dots pretzels. Is that a cracker? Would you have put that in there, Jed? I know you're a fan of the Dots.
I do like the Dots, but no, that's not a cracker. That would be a pretzel.
Okay. That would be a pretzel. Okay, I didn't know if a pretzel was a cracker, but the Dots pretzels sold at your neighborhood Hen House. Go to henhouse.com to see all the specials, including those specials back at the meat counter. Thank you to our friends at Hen House, because I had steaks on the grill last night from our friends at Hen House, the great meat counter at Hen House. See them today. Go to henhouse.com to see all the specials. And thanks to all our friends at Hen House for all the great work they've done during these difficult times and showing up and being there so that all of our families can continue to have food on our tables. So we tip of the cap to our friends at Hen House. Let's get to the drill. We talk about where the stories are happening. They're definitely happening in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Our friend Matthew Caller, Purple Insider, is there. Matthew, how are you, sir?
Holding up, I guess would be the best way I would describe it.
Yeah, listen, I know for everybody in Minneapolis, I know any town, we've got it going on, the protests and what has become amounts of violence as well are happening in every town, but obviously you're the epicenter where George Floyd was killed on the streets of Minneapolis. Just give me a vibe for what the mood is like there in Minneapolis right now.
Well, very violent over the weekend, for sure, with protesters and rioters that I think maybe had no interest in protesting and don't care about George Floyd at all, did a lot of destruction to the city, which forced a reaction that, in my opinion, was not fast enough to protect businesses, because a lot of the destruction was done to minority-owned businesses and things like that. And again, a lot of it was done by people who were not trying to protest anything, but just trying to break things. And that's where they had to call in the National Guard and things like that. And over the last 2 days, we have seen a massive peaceful protests, marches, things like that. I know that today those have continued. And I think that the message is being spread pretty well by those people that this is unacceptable, what happened to George Floyd and what's happened to so many other black men, especially in the hands of police violence. And then the other problem we've seen is that, you know, when you send the National Guard in and you empower the police even more, we've seen a lot of journalists and a lot of innocent protesters and things like that get harmed as well. There was a journalist who lost sight in one eye after being hit by a rubber bullet. And that's unacceptable also. And it's very hard. I think we're all getting a sense for how hard it is to hold people accountable when they cross the line like they did with George Floyd and like they've done in some of these protests that I think by now we've all seen a lot of the videos of innocent people being hurt and pepper sprayed and things like that by police.
Yes, and tell me, you mentioned the journalist part of things, and, you know, watching on CNN, Omar Jimenez be cuffed and arrested live on television while doing a report where he stands there and says, okay, we're standing where you told us, you know, where do you want us? You know, where do you want us to move? We'll move there. He gets no response from the police. They ultimately end up arresting him. He goes peacefully. Then they arrest everybody else with his camera crew. That was disturbing to me, right? Answer the man's question. Where do you want him to go? He'll walk over and stand where you want him to go. But instead, he's arrested. An hour later, he's let go. And, you know, that speaks to me that clearly the decision was made. No, he should have never been arrested. Right. And taken away in cuffs. I don't know. I have no idea what happened once they took him away. But this hits close to your home. Right. Your wife is a journalist and she was struck by what? Tear gas?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep. Luckily, she's OK. But, you know, it was pretty scary. I mean, she wasn't obviously doing anything that would have put police in harm's way, and she was trying to do her best to stay back from where, you know, things were getting escalated with riots and things like that, and yet still ended up in the way of some tear gas. And that was, like, after the other night, we felt like we got off pretty lucky, considering that others were pepper sprayed. And the most disturbing videos, I thought, were not only getting arrested journalists, but being pepper sprayed for no reason. And no, they have press passes, and it was part of the curfew agreement that press could be out there covering it. And yet still, they were stepping over the line. And I just couldn't help but think, like, this is how we got here to begin with, was police abusing their power. And, you know, I think for the most part, they've done a terrific job of slowing down the destruction of things to almost a halt, and they have largely protected protesters. But what you always have in the situation, whether it's George Floyd or journalists being under attack, is certain people that feel like there's no accountability, certain police that feel like they can do whatever they want and that they'll get away with it. And the leadership here has largely allowed that. The police union chief, and I think that the mayor and the governor, did not do enough to protect journalists, or did not make it very, very clear that they were allowed to be there, because it seemed like some police did not even know that journalists were allowed to be where they were and didn't understand fully the rules. And I think that's been a huge part of this entire thing, too, and why it was allowed to escalate, is just the poor response by the people in charge. So you have a horrific event that you know is going to set off protests, and instead of trying to make immediate changes and immediate arrests, they waited around. They put out, you know, pathetic statements and things like that, and then that just escalated things. And then you have police escalating them further by doing these things to journalists and other people who are peacefully protesting. So, you know, I think that there have been a lot of people who have shown a complete inability to handle this type of thing.
Will we see change?
Well, God, I hope so. I mean, that's the only way I could put it, because, I mean, it's just hard, man, because you see articles being written now about, hey, maybe Colin Kaepernick was right. It's like, well, you just figured this out. This is the third or fourth in Minnesota time that we've been through this same story. I hope that this one has taken it to another level nationally to enact change. But when you see people and teams and sports players and stuff put out statements that say what we all need to do is just love each other more. No, we need things legally that change the definition of what police can do and get away with and how they're held accountable for things like this. And what I don't understand is why other police aren't for this, because it makes them all look bad. I know plenty of people who are in law enforcement and service and things like that, and who are great people who do the job the right way. Don't you want everyone to be held accountable who doesn't, who makes you look bad? I don't understand why we're all not on the same page with needing change, but I'm not confident in it, unfortunately.
Yeah, we went through this with the Colin Kaepernick situation. That's exactly what this was about, and more time was spent complaining about the protest of kneeling at a football game than addressing the issue that they were trying to draw attention to. It will only get worse if change doesn't come. I will assure you of that. The protests, which will come with it, followed behind, like you said, people that are just looking for mischief, the riots will come after it. I'll say this, there was no scheduled protest and there was no scheduled riot that just happened to be on the books, and then George Floyd just, you know, coincidentally died before it. Those come after the atrocity occurs, right? That's how it works. When it's all said and done. But Matthew, we're thinking about you guys up there in Minneapolis, everybody up there. Difficult times. Stay safe, my friend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks. Take care. Alan's days,
before it was nice. All right, Temkin, 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, and of course Big 12 Network on Sirius. Ari, how are you, sir?
Sure, I'm doing well, man. How are you, buddy?
Not bad. Real quick, protests in Dallas. I haven't, you know, and I'm not the most avid news watcher, so maybe I missed it. I haven't seen off the top of my head anything from Dallas, but is that occurring in Dallas, Texas as well?
Oh yeah, there's been a lot going on here, actually. And in Dallas, there's actually a 7 o'clock curfew that they put out for Dallas, for a perimeter around the city. So, yeah, there's been ton of rioting and looting going on here as well, as you found across most of the country as well.
Okay. Let's shift gears. Big 12 in the midst of a pandemic and now a racial crisis in this country is opening up to start playing some fall sports. What's the reaction for most folks about the Big 12 finally trying to start getting things going?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest surprise is that Lincoln Riley, who initially said June 1st, you know, you'd be crazy to have people already back on campus by June 1st, you know, he's really kind of putting his money where his mouth is, you know, because he's not having his team back until July 1st, whereas obviously we know a lot of the SEC and Ohio State are coming back June 8th. A lot of the Big 12 are going to return June 15th. But, yeah, Lincoln Riley, you know, was outspoken about not wanting to bring guys back too quickly and how difficult that can be for, you know, keeping guys away from, you know, situations, social situations where they could then become, you know, afflicted by it. So, you know, it's very intriguing to me that Lincoln, you know, a major power broker in college football, is sort of, you know, losing multiple weeks to his biggest competitors because he thinks it's genuinely the right thing to do. And you just don't see that very often. And you know, Lincoln feels like if they've got to play games and the schedule is going to be, you know, not going to be moved, that July 1st, if he gets his team, you know, down there July 1st ready to go, that will be enough time to get his team ready to go for, you know, for games, and that any other time additionally could be wasted by, again, people in social situations where, you know, they could come down with the virus themselves. So that to me, Serena, is the most intriguing thing about the Big 12 is Lincoln Riley made some pretty outspoken comments about it and is really sticking to his guns there and feels that, you know, July 1st is an adequate enough time to get his team ready to play a football game.
Is the part that the Big 12 is missing, you know, the Big 12 coaches and really even maybe Commissioner Bowlesby, not maybe, he's said similar things, about the fact that, well, you know, they're safer in the campus weight rooms where they're going to sanitize things and be on top of the cleaning than they are going to, I think you said, a Gold's Gym. That's great, but they're not just going to the weight rooms, right? It's where do they go eat? Where do they go for entertainment? Are they really ready to say that they're confident that they're safer being there on campus doing everything that goes along with living everyday life than they would be back at their homes?
Well, that's exactly what Lincoln is saying. You know, you get these guys back on campus, and, yeah, so they might have access to, you know, hospitals and doctors and you know, the ability to sanitize facilities and try to keep everybody as safe as possible. But, I mean, there's a lot of idle time there where these guys are going to be back on campus, and what are you going to be doing when you're back on campus? You're going to hang out with friends. You're going to be, you know, potentially going places. So, you know, that to me was the most eye-opening part of what Lincoln was saying. You know, yeah, we've got all of these on campus, we've got all of these facilities and ways in which we can make this safer, but ultimately you're talking about multiple weeks, in the case of Lincoln, a month of, you know, of time where these guys are on campus and, you know, as opposed to being at home where they have a safe environment, they're not going to be socializing, you know, they're going to probably be practicing more social distancing. So, yeah, I think that, you know, it's easy to say, hey, we've got all these doctors and facilities and everything that we've got, you know, rolled up here. But I think Lincoln is right, you know, that there's idle time there and that's time guys could be in a position socially to be coming down with this virus. So, you know, it what his quote initially, Sarin, was to the effect of if we lose a day here, but that's another day where they were able to do more research to figure out, you know, treatment and on, then I'd rather have a productive play there. And,
yeah,
you know, I think what he's saying is very true, and many of these coaches are probably doing things more self-serving because obviously, you know, they're not in the position that Lincoln Riley is where he can keep his job regardless.
Last question, any update, and knows a perfectly fine answer, on getting a contract done between the Cowboys and Dak Prescott?
No. I mean, it's funny how a story can evolve only as an illusion, because the story really hasn't evolved. You know, it's the same story that's been, and as we talked about, but it's funny how you get other people sort of involved, other people from outside the market that are now involved, and it seems like the story is evolving, and it's not. The story remains the same. The Cowboys want a long-term deal. Dak does not want a long-term deal because he wants to cash in again when the salary cap goes up. The piece that Charles Robinson certainly started to interject here. And Terrell Robinson, certainly one of the guys from outside Dallas that's reputable and has pretty good sourcing inside Dallas, and Jerry Jones, basically said, like, this could be a now or never situation. If Dak and the Cowboys don't get an agreement before this franchise tag deadline, July 15th, and then with a stagnant salary cap in the next year, depending on what happens with revenue from tickets, you know, the deal is not going to go up for the Cowboys in a stagnant salary cap. So this could be the now or never type scenario to get a deal done with Dak Prescott. Otherwise, you'd be looking at a situation with, like, Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes from here. Ari Temkin in Dallas. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Stay healthy.
You too, buddy. Be well, Stern.
If you're going to San Francisco.
Make sure you call Roxy Bernstein, 95.7 The Game, A's Radio, and ESPN in San Francisco, California. Roxy, how are you, sir?
Hanging in there, sir. And you?
Yeah, the same. Dark times right now in America today for a lot of different reasons. How is San Francisco holding up? How are the protests and what's going on there?
Well, it's not just San Francisco. We've seen them in Oakland. We've seen them, sure, in San Jose as well. And, you know, San Francisco is usually at the forefront of protests and marches and political activism, but it hasn't been probably as dramatic and active as we've seen in the past for whatever reason. Take it for what it is. No, there's still looting and destruction, which is going on just about every major city. But by San Francisco history, it's been a little lighter than we've seen in the past.
Okay. And, of course, Colin Kaepernick played for the San Francisco 49ers and never has played again. How much has his name been brought up, and how much is the fact that what he protested, seemingly no progress has been made in this country, how much is that topic being brought up, and has anybody heard directly from Colin Kaepernick?
No one's heard from Kaepernick directly, but people around him, we've seen some tweets from people like Eric Reed, who is prominent with Kaepernick in terms of taking that stance and taking a knee with Colin on the sidelines. And it's always been the feeling of the 49er fans in the area that Colin's been blackballed, that teams weren't going to pick him up for whatever reason. They didn't want the distraction. They didn't want the political activism and all the things under the microscope that come with Colin Kaepernick. But the feeling, Seren, has always been he was good enough to play. And I think that's the general consensus. It's just people were afraid, I think, to sign him and bring him into the locker room, not knowing what the ramifications would be in terms of how it would be viewed. And now the NFL coming out with some statements. It's rubbed some people the wrong way for a number of reasons here, just because of the success that Colin Kaepernick had as a player with the 49ers. Now, the fit may not have been with San Francisco because they went out and got Jimmy Garoppolo, and they moved on from that situation when Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch came in. But the feeling also is he's good enough to be somewhere. It's just a question of in what role. Would he be a backup? Would he be a starter? And I think that's always kind of factored in the Colin Kaepernick story.
What will the 49ers have to say about this? I'm curious. I was asked the question last night on Sunday Sound Off television show. I'm a guest on 41, and it was, do the teams have an obligation to make a statement, to do so? And I would even take that further and say not just make a statement, but do something. Do you think that the 49ers will be out front in this situation, or will they stand behind and lay low behind whatever the NFL puts out?
Well, the Niners have been out in front. Jed York, in fact, pledged $1 million, and the 49ers CEO pledged $1 million donating to local and national organizations who are creating change. So they have tried to be at the forefront. They have tried to be outspoken. They've contributed money. But what else is going to come with that? And I think that's the other interesting dynamic here is, yes, the 49ers have always prided themselves of being proactive, and here is Jed York coming out front and being one of the first franchises. We've seen others donate money to some of the causes. But what else is going to come with that? And it's just not Okay, it's great to donate financially, but what else? And I think that's the question a lot of people have. On top of the Niners willing to put themselves out there and donate a significant amount of money.
Yeah. All right, football note. George Kittle wants a new contract. He doesn't want to just be the highest paid tight end. He wants a lot more than that. How does this one end?
I think he's with the Niners. They'll get something done, Seren. They know how valuable he is. And the problem with the two sides is they're not close in terms of where they view this to go financially. They will get close at some point. But the Niners view him as a tight end, where Kittle does not and his agents don't want to be viewed as a tight end because they view him in a different mold. When you look at Travis Kelce, for example, he's not necessarily viewed as a tight end, even though that's the position he plays. But how dynamic he is and the playmaker that he is, he needs to be rewarded differently. And I think that's the way the Niners have to approach this with Kittle, because he is the number one playmaker for this offense outside of the quarterback. And I believe at some point they'll come to that realization and they'll get close to a contract. And I do believe it will happen. It's just going to take some time and moving, especially for the 49ers part.
All right. Great stuff as always. Roxy Bernstein in the Bay Area. Stay healthy, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon.
You too, Seren. Take care.
Pete Fox, KLOS, in Los Angeles, California, is next. Pete, how are you, sir?
Hanging in there, man.
How is L.A. doing with the protests that are going on across this country?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's really tough. You know, I think depending on where exactly you are and how close you are to the epicenter of some of this stuff in L.A., personally, I'm about an hour away. But, you know, nonetheless, you still feel it. You see it. You can't help but avoid it. You can't help but be aware of it, rather. And you know, if you try to avoid it, I don't think it's really that possible, because it is omnipresent, and I think rightfully so. You know, so the city, I think, is trying to kind of take the temperature of, you know, where we go from here, really, ultimately. Like, what is the next logical, hopefully productive step to turn all of this into something positive?
Yeah, and that's what we can all hope. We'll see if there's any change. No change has really come. I was just saying this with Roxy, since the Colin Kaepernick, it ended up being a debate about what kneeling during a national anthem means and not about what the issue was. Maybe the focus will stay on what the issue is this time around. We will see.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James, stepping up, making statements, being out front. How is that going over in Los Angeles?
Well, he, you know, this is not new for LeBron. He's always kind of taken this position, his position of authority as a figurehead in not only the world of sports, but of entertainment in general. I mean, there's not many people, even if you're not a huge sports fan, who don't know who LeBron is. And I think, you know, the fact that he does take this position of authority and try to come about with some sort of positive change, I think people are more than willing to support that and accept that from him. You know, back to the I Can't Breathe t-shirt, 2000, I believe it was 16, in that neighborhood. You know, so today, yesterday, he's posting things, you know, making a lot of statements, retweeting things from guys like Jimmy Kimmel who have made positive statements. Doc Rivers made some positive statements. You know, Barack Obama wrote a letter, and LeBron retweeted that, and, you know, saying things like, the point of the protest is to raise public awareness, put a spotlight on injustice, and to make the powers that be feel uncomfortable. And I think LeBron is happy to take that mantle and make people feel uncomfortable, make people try to do better, right? Because this is just, it's just unacceptable, all of this stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, it gets muddled in the sad parts of looting and stealing, which doesn't necessarily equate to solving a problem and making things better, but it does explain how mad people are. And I think a lot of people need to, you know, take notice of that and say, you know, what does this all mean, and how do we get better from it? Doc Rivers, you know, saying something very similar that LeBron posted on his Twitter feed, that, you know, we need to have these uncomfortable conversations. We need to, you know, make this not just an African-American issue, make it a human issue. So these are the kind of things that LeBron tries to, I think, somewhat successfully, you know, to put in the forefront and make people talk about, and hopefully that will create change.
I know LeBron's only been in Los Angeles for a year, or maybe less than technically when you consider when he actually started playing, but, you know, a lot of the criticism, there was a whole segment of Michael Jordan in The Last Dance about how he would not take on the role of publicly endorsing and commenting about an African-American candidate in the state of North Carolina, and he was criticized for that. He was accused of being more interested in his own pocketbook than doing what was right for the African-American community, and that upset a lot of people, most of which being African-Americans. LeBron James, as you pointed out, has never been afraid to jump right into a social issue. I'm curious, has anybody talked about whether or not that affects his bottom line? Is he doing this? He's certainly got big endorsements. I know I'm not saying the man's poor or hurting or anything like that, but would he be a bigger marketing superstar if he weren't so out in front of these different issues?
Personally, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like times have changed, right? Michael Jordan is now doing that, right? So it just feels like we're in a different era, right? So LeBron has been this guy, and I think it comes down to how genuine he is. He's not like a poser. I mean, this is who he is, and he'll fight the fight. You know, when that Fox News chick said, you know, shut up and dribble, he took that on head on and went towards it. So, he leaned into that sort of thing, and he always leans into these sort of things. So that is who LeBron is, and I think people appreciate him being genuine to who he is. And that's kind of the day and age I think we're in as compared to 10, 15, 20 years ago when things were just different. You know, things change. So LeBron has taken notice of that, and I think he has embraced this position of authority and fame that he has been bestowed. And, you know, it's all hopefully for the better. So the thing that he gets criticized a little bit for around here is that he's not an LA guy, right? He's just kind of a Johnny come lately. But a lot of that changed dramatically when Kobe died, because it kind of like he was just, you know, baptismal by fire. The indoctrination to the Laker Nation after that changed. It was a total 180. Like, everyone was like, now he's one of us.
Yeah, I know, it's kind of like announcers, right? Fan bases don't like him, then you win a championship, and it's like, no, you were there with us. You're one of our own now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I've watched that dynamic change as well. So it is interesting, you know, just how it is. Which is, look, some of it's just paying your dues, right? Going through some things. You've been through times. We've been through this together. I went through it with you. Now you're one of us. I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing, but the way you lay it out, yeah, that's absolutely the way it plays out. A lot of times. Pete Fox in Los Angeles. Great stuff as always, my friend. Have yourself a great week. Stay healthy.
Yeah, you too, man. Thanks.
Ah! Feel good.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I love it. I love it. This is what I was told in my headset. Ben is ready, and remember, he always picks his own bump music. Good to know. Good to know. Hey, listen, I'm not going to tell you that I can't sing this entire song myself. I got two daughters, and this song is played. It's a catchy tune. I could sing right along as well. Ben Kirchival from CBS Sports joins us here on our Sprint Guest Line. He is brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. Of course, everything you need to have fun with your family, whether it's in your man cave, whether it's outside, they have been very, very busy, but they have still got you covered, whether it's pools, hot tubs, patio furniture, grills, gorilla basketball goals, familyleisure.com, and, of course, see them in person at K10 in Ridgeview. Ben, welcome to the Sprint Guest Line. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. It is definitely not a party in the USA right now. It's like the opposite of a party.
Yeah, that's that is right. I didn't even make that connection. I hope you're doing well. I hope your family is doing well. Let me say that. And it is a painful day in America, painful days all around. I hope everyone is safe and you're doing your best to get through this times. I'm not even sure, Ben, where you're located. What part of the country are you located in?
So we're in Austin. We're actually up in Cheyenne, Wyoming right now visiting my family. It was just pure happenstance. We said we needed to get out of Austin just because we've been holed up for 3 months with COVID-19. And my fiance has asthma, so we said, okay, we're not going out other than having to go to the store and all that kind of stuff. And but, you know, you do that for a few months and you say, all right, we need to stretch our legs a little bit here. So we just got out of town to see some family where it's not quite as hot, and it's just good to be around people that you love. But we left Austin right around the time right around the time where, the weekend things really started to pick up across the country with protests, and Austin certainly has its share of protests and some turning violent or turning to looting and things like that. It's a bad time, and it's a very painful time for a lot of reasons, and there are a lot of feelings associated with that, and it's kind of hard sometimes to make sense of all of it. But really, I think the best thing we can do right now is understand that there are people who've had to deal with this for a very long time, and the best thing you can do is open your heart, open your ears, probably stop talking so much.
Yeah, and start actually making change, right? That's what's going to have to happen. All right, let's shift gears. We'll get into some college football talk, although still not football on the field. You wrote a piece, many pieces, as you are wanting to do. Power Five conference commissioners urge Congress to expedite legislation on name, image, and likeness. I've read your opinion on it. I will tell you my opinion was I can't believe the balls, frankly, to go out and the idea that the government would have time during these pressing times to sit and manage what should have been done years ago. What is your reaction to them reaching out for this?
Well, it is an interesting time because you're coming into an election year. You have COVID, things that government is dealing with, and then obviously on top of that, given the last week or so, there's a lot on the plate, and it just was interesting to me, the letter from the Power Five commissioners, and what they're basically asking for anyone who's the uninitiated, is they're looking for NIL legislation to basically help protect them from any potential future lawsuits that they might have from the athletes in dealing with these types of things. So what you had in April was the NCAA basically saying, we support this proposal from our working group to have athletes be able to, profit off of their name, image, and likeness, which was a major turning point. But as with the NCAA, it's akin to kicking the can down the road a little bit. A lot of bureaucracy, a lot of red tape, especially when you try to get Congress involved. And so for the Power Five commissioners to come out separately, and even though the letter that they wrote didn't necessarily say anything terribly different from what the NCAA said, the fact that they, said time is of the essence, this is a timely matter, there's some urgency to this. The fact that they kind of went above and around the NCAA a little bit, I thought was the interesting part, because now they're basically saying, look, we feel like our voice is just as important, if not more important, than the NCAA's. And while I don't think that necessarily directly means they're just going to break away from the NCAA, I do feel like there's an underlying tone of, if something's going to get done, we're going to be the ones to make it happen, not you.
And it is. And we're talking to Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports. And I know Dennis Dodd did a piece on the Power Fives breaking away there at CBS Sports last week. This does feel like they're going right over the heads of the NCAA, to which I would say, grow a pair and break away. Like, they seem to want to have their cake and eat it, too. Like, well, we want the NCAA to do the enforcement and do all these different things, but we don't want to give them any money. And, they get the tournament. That's okay for now. But they bark about how – and, listen, they've got a legit beef. I'm not telling you that, listen, our teams make all the money and then, Division II teams are getting some of it. I get the overall there's a real debate to be had there. Like, how should it work? But, like, crap or get off the pot, right? Like, break away or work with the NCAA. But just – staying in the NCAA and going over their head is just another corporate screaming baby, in my opinion.
Well, I think it's important to always remember that when we talk about the NCAA, I mean, it's the members. It's
right.
The universities. It's the presidents and the chancellors, and the Power Five commissioners who wrote that letter work on behalf of those presidents and chancellors. So the NCAA is like a homeowners association. We call it a governing body, but it's basically like someone who comes around and tells you that you have to, your lawn can't be any higher than 3 inches, you know, whatever it is. So I think when we talk about the potential of the major conferences in college athletics breaking away, the one thing that I guess maybe holds them back to some degree, and I think it's legitimate, is that there is a somewhat, I don't even want to call it policing, because that's not really it, but there's a watchful eye over what everyone does. And if there's one thing I feel like I've learned from schools over the past decade in covering the sport, especially when it comes to things like major sanctions, is it's not so much about what an individual school or a conference, whatever, might be able to do. It's about making sure what someone else can't do. I feel like that's always a really big distinction. Is they want to make sure that everyone kind of has to follow the same thing. You know, you can go back to a few different hot-button topics over the last few years. You go back like 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Remember when oversigning was like a major thing and everyone got all up in arms about oversigning? Well, that was just to make sure that, you know, no one else could do it. No one else could stack up on things. Then you go back like 3, 4 years ago. Remember when satellite camps was a thing? Like, and they were mad that someone wanted to come into their backyard and hold a summer camp so they would poach it. It's always about what someone else could possibly do. So when we talk about power programs within the NCAA, it's just to kind of make sure that everyone is sort of following the same thing. If the Power Five broke away, and, you know, I think I'm more of a skeptic than others, but I certainly would believe if it's a non-zero chance, I think it's definitely possible. It's not like they would break away and then be like, okay, we're free to do whatever they want. I mean, they would break away with the idea of there has to be something. It's called by any other name, right? It would be the same thing, just under a different title.
It would be, but seemingly it would just write rules for themselves. And that's what I think is interesting, that they had all that talk and they're ready to go because they don't like sharing the basketball money, right? They already got pretty much all the football money because that's done by each league. And so they didn't care that one league's got more. We know how they brag. SEC's got more money than the Big Ten or you know, than the Pac-12, and the SEC laughs at the Pac-12 networks, and then the Big 12 beats their chest. Now they have less mouths to feed, so our deal's better, right? They go back and forth about it. But in the end, they know they're making way more than Mountain West and AAC, and they don't have to share with them. So that's good enough for them. But in basketball, they're not getting all the revenue. And what really got this going again was the Rice Commission, right, about college basketball. Because one of the things in the Rice Commission it said was name, image, and likeness. Players should be paid for it. They've had, you know, however many years you consider college athletes being profitable, you know, the explosion of sports dollars, right, to figure this out. This came along, and the states finally said, enough's enough. Like, we're not waiting around for the schools, because you're right. The NCAA is just the member institutions, and they're never getting around to this, and this is wrong, this is unfair, so we're going to write our own rules. And now they're terrified that Florida might write some sweet ones and Alabama will get smoked in recruiting because every kid wants to go play in Florida because it's much more lucrative to play in Florida or California or where it is. This is, again, what they're afraid of, right? Getting their ass kicked, and they have no control over it because it's the states that will be writing the laws.
Yeah, so I mean that's what I'm saying is I think there's always going to have to be like there's always a fear of what someone else might do. So I think that even if you broke away, there would be some sort of watchful eye over it. But to your point about the NCAA, you go back to the Rice Commissioner. I mean the other part of the Rice Commission was that you had, you know, all these findings, and then all of a sudden it's like the NCAA was. I mean, I know things are starting to, you know, come out from that as far as, you know, sanctions and stuff go, but by and large, NCAA was almost powerless in that type of situation because you realize, you know, they don't have subpoena power. I mean, there's a real limitation, there's a real cap on what they're able to do. I don't disagree with you that the NCAA rule book is outdated, bloated, right? It's too much. I mean, the things that even, you know, when you're talking about their saying, okay, yes, we are okay with going forward with a proposal for NIL rights, and then that's echoed by Power Five commissioners. You're reading the language of this, and it's saying things like, well, we want to preserve the sanctity of the recruiting process. I'm like, what in what universe? You know, like, where does this ever happen? So it's just one of those things that eventually it might happen, and I would get the reasons behind it. I just think what ends up happening is everyone's so concerned about what someone else may or may not do that ends up being, if nothing else, a real restrictor from progress, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. We're talking to Ben Kirchival here in the program. So talking to people, how do you think it all plays out? What happens?
In terms of having
name, image,
power
likeness.
Five.
Yeah. Power, all of it, well, you know, all of it together.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, like I said, I'm probably more of a skeptic that anybody would absolutely break away. Dennis is, I think, is way more convinced that he would happen, and he has a far greater, I think, finger on the pulse than I do on this type of thing. So if Dennis thinks something is more likely to happen, I would say, you know, he's probably more well-informed on that type of thing. But at some point, it probably does, just because I think the landscape is shifting so much, and it's happening very rapidly. You know, but what ends up happening is, you know, things change so quickly, but then, you know, you go back to the rules and the landscape of it all, and it's so sort of stuck in the past that sometimes change then just kind of happens all at once. To me, I just don't think it happens for a long time. Some people think it'll happen in a few years. I don't think this stuff happens for a while. But again, that is the skeptic in me, in terms of I've seen, you know, so many kind of, you know, veiled threats about leaving, and I've never felt like it was ever actually imminent.
We're talking to Ben Kirchival from CBS Sports here, kind of shifting gears now. We had Bob Bowlesby on not long ago, and he's kind of been a popular guest everywhere. And talking about, hey, we, you know, one of the things he said to us that I thought was, you know, something that I've hung on to is we have to learn to coexist with the virus. You know, like before, when we first heard talks about getting sports going again, it was all like how to just assume, you know, isolate everybody. And that's still a lot of the focus is in the professional. But he pretty much said, look, we can't quarantine, you know, 130 Division I schools with 100 plus kids and all the support staff and all that. And he said, you know, it's going to be a bumpy road. He said, expect disruptions. He talked about how we might have to have, you know, quarantine a team and they're going to miss their next two games. And then how do we schedule on the fly? As a guy who covers college football, how much did that, one, you know, scare you about where we're going with college football? But also, maybe for me, it gave me some comfort in the fact that they're at least addressing the real issues and not just whistling by the graveyard and acting like there'll be no problem.
Well, I, to me, Bowlesby was probably the closest that we've come to having someone come out and say, you know what, we don't fully know. We're going to do the best that we can, but we don't know how this is going to look. The only thing that Bowlesby feels like he knows, and I would agree with him, is that there's not going to be any uniformity. And you can take that however you want. You can take that in terms of the, excuse me, the number of games. You can take that in terms of, are stadiums empty or partially full when these are being played? The season start on time for every single team. I mean, you know, this virus, there's no prejudice for states. You know, some states are hit harder than others, but it can cross state lines very easily, and because everything is so interconnected. So for me, I just look at that and say, yeah, that's about what it is. I mean, you know, I have my own feelings about whether the college football season should be played, but I also know that money talks, and it would be a nuclear winter for college athletics if college football did not happen in some form in 2020. So with that baseline understanding, again, we can even tie that back into NIL rights and say, look, man, if you're going to make these people come back and play, we got to recognize they're moneymakers, right? Like they're not just like regular student athletes, no matter how much you might try to speak that into existence. But to me, that signaled like, yeah, okay, we understand that if we get started on this thing and then we have to stop it, or, you know, we don't know what the details of that plan are yet. We're kind of going with this as we go. We're flying by the seat of your pants. But we understand that this is not going to go off without a hitch, and it's not going to be equal. And some schools are going to have more of an advantage than others, or if you put it the opposite way, some schools are going to be at a real disadvantage. And we are just going to have to deal with that. Not, you know, you can't just take the 2020 season, or maybe even the 2021 season, you can't just say that and be like, well, this wasn't fair. Well, we're all just trying our best here. We're trying to make this happen, and we know that in order to do that, there's gonna be a lot of hiccups along the way. So I actually admire some sense of transparency on that front.
Agreed. Ben Kercheval is with us. Time for our final four quickies for you, Ben. Just tell me the first thing that comes to mind. Is Austin, Texas overrated?
Yeah, okay. It is. We're getting out pretty soon, I feel like. It's past its prime for sure.
Okay, because I hear, oh, Austin's great. Austin, I've never been there. And I'm like, the amount of people that are telling me how great Austin is, I'm like, at some point, you know, I'll quote Mitchell Schwartz of the Chiefs, who was asked about him finally getting some recognition. He goes, I don't know, it's a fine line. Seems like you're underrated a lot, and then you immediately go to overrated. And it sounds like Austin may have crossed that line when it's all said and done. All right, when do we get a college football playoff expansion?
I'm going to say 2021. When's the next read? It's up for in like 2024 or 25, if I'm remembering that correctly. I'll say 5 years. I'll say 5 years.
Okay, 5 years. Name another Miley Cyrus song other than the one you requested to open.
Oh, man. Okay. See You Again, I think, is what it was called. That was when she was actually like still Hannah Montana. I don't even think it's when she was Miley yet, but it was a radio single.
Okay. Good to know. I'm proud of your music knowledge there. That's awesome. Proud of the boldness to request Miley Cyrus as well. And 4 years from now, you know how I love you guys, coaches, rankings, love your Cover 3 podcast and listen to you guys break it down and everything. And it's when people go to it, look at it, remember, it's a composite, right? You got to ask each guy what their list was. You can't get pissed. Don't get pissed at Tom Fornelli just because he's the one who pinned the piece on it. But it's all the guys at CBS that ranked at four Big 12 coaches in the top 25. In no particular order, I know it was Lincoln Riley was up at, I think, 3 or 4. 13 was Mike Gundy. I think 16 was Gary Patterson, and 25 was Matt Campbell. Other six guys, 4 years from now, who is most likely to be in the top 25 at their current school?
Chris Kleiman.
Yep, there it is. Okay. Thought that might be it. Tom Herman's actually ranked higher than him, but it's a job that you can do pretty good and you're fired at. So he's got to turn the corner. So Chris Kleiman, I thought, might be the answer. Ben, always appreciate the time. Enjoy your time away and the cool weather up there in Wyoming. Stay healthy, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
You bet. Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports. Great work there. Check it out. Their college football coverage is outstanding. All the guys there, and we always appreciate them being so generous with their time. We will take a break. Come back. You're in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
It's okay. I'll be all right. If you call a dead soul condemned to swim in a sea of bitter tears for the rest of his days, all right.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt into the hour answer. Larry Centers, 52 today. First running back to catch 100 passes in a season. How many others have done it?
Marshall Faulk?
Nope.
Marshall Faulk didn't do it?
Not 100 catches.
Wow. Well, I said three.
Three's the answer.
Oh, I said Tomlinson, Faulk, and McCaffrey. Who was it instead of Faulk?
Matt Forte, 2014. Ah. He gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, okay.
McCaffrey's done it back-to-back years.
Yeah, McCaffrey's been the modern running back is Christian McCaffrey. That's what
sure
it is. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. You know, the Kansas City Barbecue store is right across the parking lot from Joe's in Olathe, the 119th and Strangline. Sauces, rubs, grills, even the meat itself, you can get it right there. Fuel, everything is at the Kansas City Barbecue store. Find them online at thekansascitybbqstore.com. What you need to know is next.
It's the Jazz end of the hour question on the Half Shell, sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, on this date in 1975, Nolan Ryan threw his fourth no-hitter. Who threw baseball's last no-hitter? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.